Welcome to Manager Tools. Don't get rid of your performance reviews. Part 3. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. Should my organization get rid of its performance review system? How can I deliver better performance reviews? What can I do to help subordinate managers deliver effective performance reviews? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
If you want to deliver great performance reviews, you've got to start with building a relationship of trust with your directs. If you want to do that, the way to do it is with one-on-ones and feedback and coaching and delegation, all the things that effective managers do. And the best way to do that, if you're not doing it already, is roll it out with Roadmap. It's a new app within the Manager Tools app, available to all licensees. Come to the website, learn about Roadmap.
Last couple weeks, we've discussed some of the problems with performance reviews, and I think we generally, probably most people agreeing, in most companies, performance reviews are broken, but we are not recommending that you eliminate them, right? We're not. The solution is not to eliminate the performance reviews.
It's the old pop psychology thing. Oh, we don't like it, so we'll get rid of it. And if I get rid of it, if I'm the head of HR, if I'm some thought leader, if I'm a blogger, I will talk about why you should get rid of performance reviews. And it'll be cool and different. And ooh, I'm edgy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's frankly, it's ludicrous. I mean, the whole focus, I mean, I know we're supposed to be moving on to solutions, dude, but I don't know that we've ever done a cast like this where we actually say, hey, don't get rid of this organizational system, right? We don't talk that. I mean, we certainly talk about organizational systems, but not don't make recommendations about it. And of course, we have a cast coming up in the very near term about the Manager Tools performance review system to fundamentally change the way you do performance reviews and to make it a great deal easier, but to still achieve the mission. And what people who say they want to get rid of it use as justification is nobody likes them, they're not any good, and so on. Well, okay. Yeah, so that means when the first cars came out and they weren't that good and they were loud and noisy and people didn't know what they're doing, let's just go back to horses.
Every time we do something poorly, let's just stop doing it, regardless yes, exactly. of its importance.
Yeah, I think we should just go back to nature. But look, the purpose of performance reviews is still a critical necessity for growing and large organizations, which is talent management and succession planning. We've got to have input to succession planning. You can't sit. Look, data will help. The profusion of data that's coming into our organizations in the next 20 years, tracking devices and software that shows you what people are working on their computers and then uses AI to find who's doing the best things or the most interesting things or so on. All that stuff will help, but it will not substitute for the two things that only managers can do for the organization because of the nature of the distribution of the organization. The first thing is build trust. If Mike's my manager, then he's, if you'll pardon the expression, I don't think I've ever said this before on air, but it just came to me just now, trust point. Mike is my trust point for the organization. I can't really get to know all the executives or my boss's boss's boss or anything else. I mean, I can read things, I can look at videos, and I have a sense of the mission of the company, and I hope that the people at the top are behaving ethically and in the best interest of the organization and the shareholders and the stakeholders in our community, all that sort of stuff. But fundamentally, I am going to measure the majority of my trust with the organization based on my relationship with my boss.
Right. Then that's the first problem we talked about relative to performance reviews. There is a distinct lack of trust in most organizations.
And look, you're not going to build trust by putting out posters, by putting out motivational signs where, you know, things like teamwork is the dream work, or build trust one-to-one, or, you know, Uncle Trust needs you. Keep calm and build trust. Trust is in peril. Defend it with all your might, something like that. You're not going to do it that way. Trust is primarily an individualistic thing. While there is institutional trust, it's easily broken by people in the organization. And if an organization has high trust scores from its employees, but the employees start to see executives who are self-dealing, or, for that matter, I hate to be too timely, but sexually harassing their employees, you're just going to destroy trust. And people are going to say, yeah, people are our most important assets, right? And there's the cynicism that everybody's heard before. So look, the question is, how do we get there from here since we're talking about solutions? Look, guys, the answer is simple. And it's not the only answer, but it's the answer we recommend, obviously, the Manager Tools one-on-one. Even if you don't listen to us, even if you don't go back and listen to the Manager Tools Basics cast, which are available on iTunes and other podcast distribution sites, or certainly on our website, go to the map of the universe. There are also RSS feeds on the websites. The podcasts are free. And you can use our app, download our app. It's free. And you can go and bookmark all the basics casts and listen to them in order. And we'll tell you exactly what to do and how to do it. That said, you don't necessarily need to know our way of doing it. If you have a repeatable, teachable way of building trust with other people, and to be fair, going to Starbucks with people on a case-by-case basis, or to our friends in Australia, some other place that has put Starbucks out of business, because the coffee is so much better in Australia, that's not a repeatable, teachable solution. And if you're thinking that your goal is to minimize time with your directs so you can spend more time getting your work done, folks, I've been there. This is Managers Anonymous. My name is Mark, and I've been trust building for the last 25 years, and you can't do it. You won't be effective in the long run, and you are undermining the performance review system of your organization. So the solution to building trust is to sit down with another person and talk to them about things that are important to them. And that's why our one-on-one is structured the way it is. I don't want to revisit all of one-on-ones. I think it's unfair to the millions of people who download the show every month and have heard us talk about it forever and ever and ever. But again, go to the website. I think if you type in Manager Tools one-on-ones on Google, you'll go right to the page where you could click a button and start listening on the web. The preferred solution would be in the app, because the app is free and it gives it to you on your phone. You can listen to it in your car. And it's really simple. At a high level, a Manager Tools one-on-one is a scheduled, that's actually more important than the periodicity, a scheduled, it's okay if it gets moved, but it has to be scheduled in advance, a scheduled weekly. And if you have 25 directs, bi-weekly is okay. I wouldn't do it, but we understand why you would. Scheduled weekly, 30-minute long. You didn't need any longer than that. Meeting where the directs issues go first. That's why they're first on the agenda. And where you take notes. Those are essentially the non-negotiables of a Manager Tools one-on-one. And you have Mike and I's word. I've been teaching one-on-ones for 25 years after inventing this version and testing it on hundreds of thousands of managers all over the world. And we have been podcasting about it for the past, I guess it's 13 years, Mike. Yeah.
And I've been doing it for 24 years.
Yeah, 24 years, exactly.
After a good friend of mine called me and said, you suck, you need to do something different.
Yeah, you don't need a balanced scorecard, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
You need a different management.
Don't remind me.
Yeah, that was good. That was one of my best moments as a consultant. It led to this, heck. So do one-on-ones, do them weekly. You can learn for free in other podcasts here, and that's how you build trust. Now, the second problem we've got, and I described this first solution as managers actually managing, as opposed to sitting and doing emails and attending meetings and then complaining about all the meetings they go to. It's like the ultimate humble brag. Oh, I'm so busy. I just can't keep up. I'm so important. I'm so self-important. I can hardly stand it. The second thing you've got to do is, in order to have credibility at the end of the year, you have to have proven to people that you pay attention to their performance. Performance on a day-to-day basis is fundamentally behavior. And when I say behavior, folks, a lot of people don't understand this. Behaviors are not just interpersonal behaviors. In other words, the words you say, how you say them, facial expressions, and body language. Those are the four behaviors that people think of. But there is a fifth behavior. In organizational terms, the fifth behavior is work product. And work product, for those of you who are not driving and want to write it down, the quality of one's work. How good is it relative to the standard? The quantity of one's work. Is it enough? Do they meet the minimum output or frequency or amount that you need? The accuracy of the work. Is it correct? Or are there a lot of errors? Or do they do work that can be counted on as reliable by other people? The timeliness of their work, a particular bugaboo of mine, if you structure your tasks right, and we have casts for that too, you can turn tasks that you assign to people into things that only take 5 or 10 minutes. And if you give somebody a week to do a 5 or 10 minute task, when they say they were really busy, that really doesn't hold a lot of water. So quality, quantity, accuracy, timeliness, documentation. So every PowerPoint, every Excel, every Word document, every tweet, every text, and obviously in the modern world, in the organizational world anyway, maybe not in the social world, every email as well is a behavior. It is work product. And so therefore you can give people feedback about behavior. And that we have many casts about how to give feedback about particular things. One of my favorites is how to give feedback about attire. Pretty soon there won't be any standards at work for attire, and people will wear whatever they want, and they'll claim that they're expressing their individuality. Not that expressing individuality is protected in organizational life, and too many people don't know that you're supposed to be willing to give up 20%. Don't argue with me about percentages, but you're supposed to give up some percentage of your freedom. You have to pay a freedom tax, an organization or an individual tax, in order to join the organization, to allow the organization to magnify your efforts through the specialization of labor and communication and distribution. But basically, we've got casts on all kinds of situations you might want to give feedback on. And if you haven't done feedback, or again, I'll say it again, you don't have to use our model. But it is not enough that you are able to say to your boss, yes, I've told my people how they're doing. You must have done it in such a way that when we ask your directs whether or not you've talked to them, they say, yes. Not just, I think he mentioned something to me and I inferred that therefore he had a problem with X, or Y, or Z, but rather your directs say, no, when my boss talks to me about my performance, I know it. I'm clear about what I did or didn't do right. And I'm clear that he wants something different or he wants more of the same. If you can't meet that standard on your own organically, that's okay. You're like millions of other managers in the world, but learn now to get around that. The reason why your performance reviews go poorly is a combination of your lack of relationship with your directs. No offense. It was true for me. I don't mean to point a finger. It was true for Mike as well. We didn't know this stuff when we were 25. That's the reason Manager Tools exists, is we don't want you to go through the stupid stuff we went through for all those years before the scales fell from our eyes, probably on the road to Damascus. And so if you're not building trust and you're not talking about performance, what would make anyone think that at the end of the year, when you sit down to give somebody what would hopefully be a credible evaluation of their performance, and the most important other person in the world in this discussion that you're having with them is their spouse or partner, who, no offense, but doesn't think you're the greatest thing in the world, they're going to go home and you'll essentially have, without trust and without credibility, told their spouse how their family's finances are going to change next year. It is a crapshoot in the world today with managers, and it's not that hard. But the solution is not a different form. The solution is not getting rid of performance reviews. The solution is, let's do our day-to-day, week-to-week well. Let's do our jobs, because what we're talking about, if you're thinking what we're talking about is micromanagement, no offense, but you're the one smoking crack, not us. Okay, that's solution one. Managers manage.
Yeah, managers, do your job. That's the impolite way of saying it.
I hate to say it. It's a Bill Belichick kind of thing. Do your job. Yeah. Don't try to get everything done. Stop worrying about getting promoted. Start worrying about doing your job, and your job means getting the most out of your team. I remember a guy in Hawaii, Chuck Grillo, Mike. You may remember Chuck.
I do.
He turned to me once and said, best advice I ever got about being a manager and a leader was from a general. He said, Chuck, be selfish. Take care of your team. Right?
Yeah, I remember you sharing that with me. That's a pretty awesome way to say it. And it is true, right? It is.
Yeah, it's
true. You want to be great? You want to achieve great things?
Yeah, what you want is the political operators in your company who are always sucking up and always smoothing and always going to meetings and hanging around and so on. Not that there's anything wrong with being aware of politics. We've got lots of casts about that. What you want is the people who are kind of thin, kind of selfish, kind of putting a facade on. You want them to be surprised when you get promoted. Well, why would he get promoted? I mean, he's not cool. He hasn't given any big presentations. He just seems to go about his work. He's not very dramatic. I always thought what they did over there was pretty boring. Yeah. It is boring because there's no drama, there's no tension, there's no conflict, and we've improved output by 27% this year. Guess who gets promoted? The managers who improve output by 27%. How do you do that? Building trust, talking about performance, developing your people, delegating. Yeah, boring.
Exactly. Boring and effective.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's solution one, managers managing, i.e. doing their jobs. We talked about HR last couple of casts. So what role does HR play in the solutions around this?
Yeah, it's times like this, Mike, where I wish I had back the first 5 years of our podcast, where almost every time I talked about HR, I said, I hate HR. For the record, for those of you in HR.
Yeah, I know. I got a lot of feedback about that.
I should have never said it. I regret it. I justified it by saying I'm talking to managers and the average manager's relationship with his HR person was antagonistic. By the way, I said that recently, Mike, to a client, and the HR person says, no, it isn't. And one of the managers in the turned around in the room and said, yes, it is. It was great. I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. I talk to managers and
there's they some tell feedback me how they for
feel
you.
About you. Yeah. But look, HR, when you have somebody who's really good, and it happens more frequently than ever because people are demographically in the next 50 years, folks, and for those of you who are young, for the next 30 years of your career, talent is going to be increasingly important. And that means the first thing that means for you is you've got to strengthen your external network because that's where people will come from, even for mid-level jobs, but hopefully for entry-level jobs because you're at a company that promotes from within. But HR has a part in this. HR owns the system of performance reviews. And it's very likely that the person in your firm who's thinking about getting rid of performance reviews is in HR. That's sad. Because of that, HR is really well positioned to lead a necessary renaissance of annual performance reviews or performance reviews in general, as opposed to let's get rid of it because we don't like it and we don't understand it. We don't know how to do it better. You know, it'd be like saying, I don't understand profit. It's really hard. Let's not do it. And if HR is well positioned to do it and they do it, we're going to get better succession planning. Better people are going to get promoted. The leadership of the organization is going to improve. And we're going to get better performance communication. Really good, effective HR teaches this stuff, monitors stuff, measures, reports on the quality and quantity and reception of performance communications throughout the organization. It's part of their job. And if effective performance communications, I'm thinking about the feedback model, manager to director right now, if that's happening at the micro level and it's built on a trusting relationship, and by the way, our feedback model will work without a trusting relationship, but it's a little bit rougher going. If you get that, the data that gets gathered in an annual or performance review system, maybe even a semi-annual performance review system, will be more rich and more useful to the organization. And the moment anybody, interloper, comes in and says, maybe we got to get rid of performance reviews. Some other cool companies are doing that. I read a tweet or a blog about that. I think maybe we should do it. The intelligent people in the room will turn around and go, you're an idiot. Go away. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, we don't take the wheels off the car while we're driving. So what can HR do? HR's got to do a better job of helping every manager understand their responsibilities relative to performance communication to the individual. If you're an HR business partner, you got to talk to your directors and talk to your managers. Hey, do your people know where they stand? When was the last time you had a conversation about performance with one of your folks? And what did it go like? What did you say? And I got to tell you, I've seen this conversation. The HR director is at a meeting and pops in and spends a few minutes and says, hey, has anybody talked to their people about performance recently? A couple of people raise their hand. Give me an example of how the conversation went. Oh, it went good. No, I mean, really, let's role play, or, you know, you play both parts and tell me how the conversation went. Well, you know they'd done a really good job on something. So I texted them and said, nice work. And the HR person goes, what? Well, I mean, I'm sorry. Is that a communication? Well, yeah, it's communication. But is it a conversation? No. I mean, do they know what the nice work was for? Oh, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure. And you could just see the HR senior person wanting to say, let's find this person. Who is this person? Are they nearby this conference room that I can go talk to them and find out what they perceived from your attempt, lame attempt as it is, in communicating about performance? So HR can help managers understand how important performance reviews are in succession planning. Dudes, we've got to stop believing that everything above somebody's level is literally the opposite of transparent. It's complete opaqueness. There is a yearning for power in organizations, and because people more senior than us, we don't understand them, we then turn that into, I'm going to make it hard for people beneath me to understand what I'm doing. There's active efforts to refuse people access to things. I talk to managers who are directors all the time, and they say, oh, no, I can't share my calendar with people. It's too confidential. What are you talking about? Are you kidding me? I went to your website. The CEO's calendar is public in an effort at transparency. The board is going to reach down and ask for your calendar at some point. Yeah, there's too much. No, you can't know what's going on. So what that means is now, I hate to say this, HR, but you're like a priesthood where, oh, there's special robes and we can't go there. And HR, when they come to training, they get sit in the back of the room and audit. They don't actually have to go through the training because why would they need to go to the training? I mean, they're not a manager. They're just helping managers. They don't need to know what managers need to do in order to be effective. But managers need to know how the performance review system works. I'll never forget, I was at Genentech a couple of years ago, and I saw one of the coolest things. I've mentioned this before. Genentech had called us in to do some training, and they asked for a little bit of time before the training. Even though I was still going 8 to 3:30, they said, you know, we'd like a few minutes. It's always bad. It's just like, oh, this is going to be bad. And they took like 45 minutes, which I don't have. Those of you who have been to our public conferences, you know, it's chock-a-block. It's dead full the entire time. It's a race to get done by 3:30 or 5, whenever we're finishing, depending upon the agenda. But I sat in the back of the room and watched HR be totally open about the compensation system, how buckets worked, how people were allotted buckets, what happened, and how they determined the bands that they were doing. And managers were just sucking it up. Now, this was normal at Genentech because it's a very well-managed, and the HR organization is really good there. But these managers were essentially desperate for it, even though they expected to get it. 90% of the companies in the world, all of these systems, which technically are associated with confidentiality because, we'd be talking about individual performance. No, we're not talking about individual performance. It's not confidential how the company goes about succession planning and performance communications and performance reviews. The idea that because each performance review is confidential for the direct, that therefore the entire system should be opaque to everybody is ludicrous. HR needs to take time to teach managers how data collection for succession planning and performance communications are inextricably related. Now, look, I'm not suggesting that HR needs to go on a roadshow, but golly gee, why doesn't HR put together some videos and then, no offense, have good enough relationships with directors and VPs saying, your people have got to listen to this stuff. Or if you can't get through to a VP, go to the next level down and say, look, can I have a lunch and learn with your guys? I only take 15 minutes. 15 minutes, that's all I want. Heck, I'll buy lunch. I know, I just completely upset the HR people. Oh, we don't have budget for that. But you may not have budget for it, but you can pay now or you can pay later in terms of whether or not the managers do a good job in terms of delivering what they're supposed to do. Teach your managers a company-vetted system for building trusting relationships. Explain to them how to do it. Tell them that you don't get an annual review that's awesome, that's accurate, that helps the company, that makes the manager look good for having done her work well, and then is well received by the direct without having the underlying trust. And you can't build trust once a year. It doesn't work that way. And you can't give a great review without a standard, a repetitive, an acceptance, an expectation on the part of direct regarding performance communications. Don't rely on individual managers to do this and then wonder why it didn't happen. You don't need to use manager tools, but whatever you do, whatever you teach, it needs to be actionable. It needs to be teachable. It needs to be measurable. And part of the reason why performance reviews are on the chopping block in the popular management HR zeitgeist today in 2017 is because the techniques by which organizations do this are so broken because HR and leadership, don't get me wrong, haven't said to managers, it needs to be actionable, it needs to be teachable. And because this stuff isn't measured, and believe me, folks, it's coming. You're going to get measured on this stuff, whether you like it or not. And frankly, we intend to lead the way. If it's not measurable, it won't get done and it won't be granular enough. And then the trust and the communications won't be there. And then you wonder why the performance review system is so terrible. Look, when it comes to, I'm going to essentially put us out of business here, Mike, by saying, why doesn't the organization start doing what we're doing? Why, when it comes to performance reviews, why don't we meet with new managers? Hey, look, you're going to go to manager 101, management U 101. By the way, folks, if you're thinking about that, you're an organization, you're a VP, or you're a more senior, or you're an HR thought leader in your organization, if you want our help creating management 101, we'll do it with you. We'll collaborate with you. But don't promote somebody and then say, by the way, your team sits over there in the corner. Here are their files. It's almost a slap in the face. Somebody wanted to be a manager. They went through the interview process. They become a manager. And oh, by the way, we got nothing for you. And oh, by the way, you should know this job's completely different than your last one. We won't tell you that though, because if we tell you that and then not train you on how to do it, we look complicit in your failure. So meet with the new managers. Explain the timing of their responsibilities, okay? Don't just send them an email. Get to know them and say, hey, look, I want to help you out. You can't write your review in December. It has to be written in snippets and smidges and bits and pieces throughout the year, at least in your head. Wouldn't you like to write a review? Wouldn't you like it? Here's the way to communicate with people. Wouldn't you like it to have your boss sit down with you every week and talk to you about how you're doing, what your needs are, what her needs are, his needs are of you?
Of course, as long as I don't have to do it with my people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want my boss to do it with me, but my people. I mean, seriously, Mark. I mean, they're frontline people. Do they really need that? Do we really need trust with them? Oh, yeah, because they're not actually people. Right? They're just revolving robots. But imagine your boss sat down with you every week and took notes. And before he wrote your review, he went back through all 50 weeks or 48 weeks or 52 weeks of your one-on-ones with him, made some notes in the margins about themes and what he saw and what he liked and what he didn't like, and then went back through and had a process, which, by the way, is in our podcast about performance reviews, which I'm pretty sure, because this is coming out around Christmas, is actually, we just reproduced those. How to prepare for, write, and deliver a performance review. Wouldn't it be great if your boss actually went through all their emails the last year so he didn't give you a review just on what happened in October or November, but actually reviewed things that were going on in January or February and looked at report cards that come up and reporting that relate to you and your team and the people around you. So sit down, you know, give them an example of a manager who did it well and give them an example of a manager who did it poorly. Sit down with them, if you're a HR business partner for those managers, and lay out for their existing directs a set of deliverables for the manager relative to each direct's performance review, anniversary, due date, right? So, hey, look, here's your team right now. Here's when you need to start. Here are some timelines along the way. And by the way, I'll be sending you friendly reminders in the email system, and I'll text you periodically. These things are trivially simple to automate. But, of course, if you don't have a good relationship with the managers you support, none of that stuff will matter. It'll just be more diktat from on high. And all this stuff is simple backward planning. It's not hard to figure out for your organization system, whether it's pretty vanilla or it's different, when someone's review is due, what steps an effective manager would take to prepare, write, and deliver the review. If you need help figuring out the general plan before fitting it into your organization system, again, we've got guidance on that. There's a cast for that, which if we haven't said it lately, we'll say it again. We have trademarked the phrase, there's a cast for that, because that's the whole purpose of Manager Tools. So you can learn without us coming to you. Any HR professional, for every single one of his or her business partners, could have a list of every manager with directs and a red, amber, green, backwards planning spreadsheet. During review creation, delivery time, knowing whom to ask for what, whom to remind about what, will keep the managers on track. So then you're not running around like a chicken with your head cut off saying, oh, there's 23 managers that didn't do what they were supposed to do. You know what? Let's not measure people only after the fact. Let's give them some measures to keep them on track on the way up to it. The problem with reviews that lack credibility is both lack of preparation and rigid deadlines that cause managers to create a vague document which doesn't show respect for the year's worth of work the direct delivered. And so the direct reads a review that probably has something that sounds a lot like it was copy and pasted in from last year. I've said it before, I'll say it again. If I find out somebody in our organization uses copy and paste in a review, I'll skewer them And that's one of the reasons why we recommend a handwritten review. Can't copy and paste that. And by the way, I'm just going to get on my high horse, Mike, because I love this. I remember learning. Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're saying like, were you not before? Somebody has to. Somebody has to stand up for what's right. Okay. You know, it's like the end of A Few Good Men when the young private says, what did we do wrong? We didn't do anything wrong. We did what we were told. And the good-looking Lance Corporal Galloway says, yeah, we did. We did something wrong. We didn't stand up for Willie, the Marine who was killed in Guantanamo. We didn't stand up for Willie. We're supposed to stand up for people who can't stand up for themselves. So somebody has to stand up and say this stuff. This is one of those areas where in the zeitgeist today, in this new century we're in, that we're almost a fifth of the way through, focusing on employees' happiness is problematic for the organization. We mention this here because HR, sad to say, seems to be leading the charge, the mistaken charge, toward happiness seeking in the workplace. There are plenty of professionally immature contributors who don't yet realize that as a part of an independent team, I'm talking about young people, and full disclosure, guys, I'm not looking down my nose at you. I'm 57 years old, and I was young once too. It's a part of the process you go through before you get old. And when I was young, I didn't know what I was doing either, but I would have hoped that my managers, my leaders, my HR people would have taken me aside and said, hey, that's not how we do things here. You know, I don't want you to make the same mistakes I made. This is why 40-year-olds, no offense, don't like millennials, why there's a bit of a backlash against millennials, because the millennials are 20, and all 40-year-olds look down their noses at 20-year-olds, the same way that when I was 40, I looked down at 20-year-olds, and when I was 20, the 40-year-olds looked down at me.
Yeah, and all 57-year-olds wish they were 20-year-olds.
Yeah, at least in our heads, we still are, right? But there are plenty of young people in the organization say they don't realize as being part of an interdependent team, they're obligated to accept feedback from the organization. And by the way, folks, it's not a two-way street. You may think it is that it's democratic or it's consensus building. These things are ludicrous. It sounds cute to say it. And there are people, I'm sure, who blog and go, oh, there goes Horseman again, you know, saying stuff about the old organizational life. Trust me, the vertical organization with the principles that we talk about in Manager Tools will be here long after all the people are barking about how, oh, organizations don't work for me. Let's go managerless. That's funny. And so they don't know that they're obligated to accept performance communications. And if a manager tries to give professional, polite, calmly delivered negative feedback solely about behavior, not about the person, and the immature professional complains that it irritates him, it irritates her, or upsets them, it's all too easy these days to have a manager getting cautioned or counseled or met with regarding the employee's happiness. And the problem is HR is like, oh, we don't take sides. What? We don't take sides? Like, you're not Switzerland, okay? This is a fight between good and evil. It's between productivity and individual happiness. If we're all about individual happiness, let's just use heroin, because I'm told it makes people happy, at least for a while. Maybe we could just give this person some individual work so they don't have too much interaction with you. Maybe you could just take it easy on him for a while. Whenever anybody says that to you out of HR or any other performance part of the organization, you want to challenge them and say, define take it easy. Just take it easy, such a euphemism, right? Maybe you don't understand the cultural norms that make this person uncomfortable. Well, no offense. Why is the organization talking about other cultural norms when the company pays a lot of money for a website in which we tout our own cultural norms, and one of them is performance? It really is. And another one is being a team player. Well, part of being a team player is understanding that you're open to opportunities to hear how you can do better from other people. And if it makes you uncomfortable, tough. Our job is not to make you happy. Our job is to make you highly productive and for you then on your own to seek happiness as a result of your productivity. All this stuff has a chilling effect on not just the future results of the organization, but on the manager's ability to talk about performance on a regular basis, which undermines the system of succession planning and performance communications that are necessary for organizations to self-sustain into the future.
All right. Soapbox off. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, darn. You know, guys, and I apologize for the soapbox sometimes.
You don't need to apologize.
No, I got to say, I know it takes longer and we, you know, this cast is going long, but like I said, somebody's got to do it. And now at this point, 13 years on in the podcast, I don't get any comments like, oh, he's too wordy. Oh, there are a few people on iTunes that said that. But fundamentally, the vast majority of people, I sometimes say in the field, I was just talking to a client. We're recording this on Saturday morning. And I was talking to a client that I'm going to next week, 8 a.m. this morning. And he says, he actually said, don't stop. So people tell us all the time, don't stop. No, I want this stuff. Because you know what? We care. And we, I'll tell you what we care about. We care about your kids joining an organizational world that deserves them. And the way that organizations deserve people is how the managers treat the individual. So I shouldn't apologize for high standards, but I apologize because I know everybody's busy and you've got other things to do. And we're asking you for share of mind. And we know how precious it is. And we appreciate your time with us.
And there's a small set of people. This has been true since, 2005 when we first started doing podcasting, right? There's a small group of people who don't like it, right? But that's...
Yeah, that's okay.
Cause this is,
well, they're not our listeners.
This right? is just not a job. This is a passion of ours. We've been talking about this for, I don't even want to say how many years, 35 years or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, this is more than a job for us folks. If you haven't figured that out by now, we're not doing podcasts to make money. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's a really bad business model when you give them away for free.
Yeah. My significant other is on this Saturday morning, is sitting in the other room waiting for me to get off.
That's right.
Those podcast things you do so we can go have fun. Okay. Well, we've been going longer than I expected, but this is all good stuff. And again, dude, I don't think you need to apologize at all. I think it's important to know what to do, but also the why. And sometimes talk about those things that motivate us. I know when I'm listening to it, motivates me to want to be a better manager. And folks, being a great manager is, it's not easy. It takes time. It takes dedication. And you have to want, I think, you have to want to do it. You want to have to make a difference. And dude, when you go on your so-called soapbox, we make fun of that. I think it serves that purpose, at least for me. So don't apologize. Anyways, we have another piece to do here that I think is terribly important. And I would hate to rush it to try to fit the podcast into some reasonable length. So let's do that next week, and we'll say farewell for now.
Good. Thanks, partner.
All right. See you, everyone.